Hello and welcome back to another episode of Exiting the Cave Short Reads. This week, we're finishing up with Book 1 of The Consolation of Philosophy, with a proper diagnosis of Boethius's philosophical ailments, and Lady Philosophy will offer the first of her many treatments. Let's listen in, shall we? He who to the unwilling furrows gives the generous grain, when the crab with baleful fervors scorches all the plain, he shall find his garner bear, acorns for his scanty fare. Go not forth to cull sweet violets from the purpled steep, while the furious blasts of winter through the valleys sweep, nor the grape or hasty bring to the press in days of spring. For to each thing God hath given its appointed time, no perplexing change permits he in his plan sublime. So who quits the order due, shall a luckless issue rue. First then, wilt thou suffer me by a few questions to make some attempt to test the state of thy mind, that I may learn in what way to set about thy cure? Ask what thou will, I said, for I will answer whatever questions thou choosest to put. Then said she, this world of ours, thinkest thou it is governed haphazardly and fortuitously, or believest thou that there is in it any rational guidance? Nay, said I, in no wise may I deem that such fixed motions can be determined by random hazard. But I know that God, the Creator, presideth over his work, nor will the day ever come that shall drive me from holding fast the truth of this belief. Yes, said she, thou didst even but now affirm it in song, lamenting that men alone had no portion in the divine care. As to the rest, thou wert unshaken in the belief that they were ruled by reason, yet I marvel exceedingly how, in spite of thy firm hold on this opinion, thou art fallen into sickness. But let us probe more deeply. Something or other is missing, I think. Now tell me, since thou doubtest not that God governs the world, dost thou perceive by what means he rules it? I scarcely understand what thou meanest, I said, much less can I answer thy question. Did I not say truly that something is missing, whereby, as through a breach in the ramparts, disease hath crept in to disturb thy mind? But tell me, dost thou remember the universal end toward which the aim of all nature is directed? I once heard, said I, but sorrow hath dulled my recollection. And yet thou knowest whence all things have proceeded. Yes, that I know, said I, and have answered that it is from God. Yet how is it possible that thou knowest not what is the end of existence when thou dost understand its source and origin? However, these disturbances of mind have forced to shake a man's position, but cannot pluck him up and root him altogether out of himself. But answer this also, I pray thee. Rememberest thou that thou art a man? How should I not? Said I. Then canst thou say what man is? Is this thy question? Whether I know myself for a being endowed with reason and subject to death? Surely I do acknowledge myself such. Then she, dost know nothing else that thou art? Nothing. Now, said she, I know another cause of thy disease, one too of grave moment. Thou hast ceased to know thy own nature. So then, I have made full discovery both of the causes of thy sickness and the means of restoring thy health. It is because forgetfulness of thyself hath bewildered thy mind that thou hast bewailed thee as an exile, as one stripped of the blessings that were his. It is because thou knowest not the end of existence that thou deemest abominable and wicked men to be happy and powerful. While because thou hast forgotten by what means the earth is governed, thou deemest that fortune's changes ebb and flow without the restraint of a guiding hand. These are serious enough to cause not sickness only, but even death. But thanks be to the author of our health, the light of nature hath not yet left thee utterly. In thy true judgment concerning the world's government, in that thou believest its subject not to the random drift of chance, but to divine reason, we have the divine spark from which thy recovery may be hoped. Have then no fear. From these weak embers the vital heat shall once more be kindled within thee. But seeing that it is not yet time for strong remedies, and that the mind is manifestly so constituted that when it casts off true opinions, it straightway puts on false, wherefrom arises a cloud of confusion that disturbs its true vision, I will now try to disperse these mists by mild and soothing application, that so the darkness of misleading passion may be scattered, and thou mayst come to discern the splendor of the true light. Stars shed no light through the black night when the clouds hide, and the lashed wave in the winds rave o'er ocean's tide. Though once serene as day's fair sheen, soon fouled and spoiled by the storm's spite, shows to the sight turbid and soiled. Oft the fair rill down the steep hill, seaward that strays, some tumbled block of fallen rock hinders and stays. Then art thou fain clear, and most plain truth to discern, in the right way, firmly to stay, nor from it turn? Joy, hope, and fear, suffer not near, drive grief away. Shackled and blind and lost is the mind where these have sway. And so we've come to the end of Book One. My analysis for this episode will fall into two broad categories, the philosophical and the literary/religious. The philosophical analysis is mostly going to be a teaser for upcoming in-depth explorations of any number of Plato's dialogues and Aristotle's ethical works. So to begin with, Lady Philosophy offers a short gloss of Boethius's three key ailments, which will become the subject of the rest of the dialectic. Number one, Boethius has become alienated from his true nature due to a forgetfulness of the soul. A possible reference to the Platonic means of acquiring knowledge. In the coming weeks, we'll look at Plato's Meno and possibly the myth of Ur from the Republic to explore Plato's recollection theory. Second, Boethius has become confused about the true state of wicked men, because he has forgotten the telos of the universe. This will involve at least a few lengthy discussions of Plato's Gorgias and the Credo, which feature heavily in philosophy's consolations on this issue. Third, Boethius bemoans the fickle nature of Fortuna, because he has forgotten the divine authority governing the universe. Here, philosophy will rehearse Aristotle's four chief forms of terrestrial life pursuits, pleasure, power, wealth, and honor, and show how each is a pale substitute for genuine virtue, which is to be found only within. These topics won't be dealt with strictly in this order in the coming books. In fact, Book 2 will lay a charge at the feet of Fortuna first, Lady Philosophy will take on the meta role of speaking for Fortuna herself. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Stay tuned for more. This week's readings are chock full of literary and religious insights. To begin with, verse 6 is meant to set us on the right path and begin our journey on the great wheel of existence as depicted in Plato's Timaeus. Though it's not explicitly referenced here, by the end of the third book, it'll become powerfully obvious. There are also references to Plato's cave abounding in those final books as well. Verse 7 also serves to set up a new opposition and to highlight the first step on the ladder we've begun to climb, namely, the opposition between the passions and reason. The mind is to be unshackled by driving grief away. Even joy, hope, and fear are warned off in order to protect the mind from being lost. This is very clearly a Stoic lesson. But what is interesting to note here is that it is only Boethius' very first lesson, and what is to become a ladder of healing lessons, lifting him from the passions all the way up to the divine mind. After this first lesson, the Stoics very quickly lose their purchase in favor of Aristotle and Plato. Verse 6 and 7 in combination are also meant to remind us of two very important things. First, very explicitly, the divine order of the cosmos. Secondly, the means by which the great wheel of existence turns, the very source both of Aristotle's efficient and final causes of change, God. It is of the final cause, purpose, that Boethius has become forgetful and so requires reminding. He, like all of us, is a traveler on the divine highway of providential destiny. The entirety of Book 1, therefore, was preparation for this journey. Having reached the end of Book 1, let's have a look back and take a snapshot of what we've learned about the work as a whole so far. What we find is a structure that is surprisingly similar to works like Dante's Divine Comedy or Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. Chaucer, by the way, produced a popular late medieval translation of the Consolation of Philosophy. Anyway, in particular, we can see a vague ladder-like structure laid out before us, as depicted on the gown of Lady Philosophy herself. We'll be moving from our immediate circumstances to the realm of fortune, and from there to the realm of fate, and finally to the highest order of the divine wheel of existence, divine providence. To make this point more clear, I will offer a quote from Thomas F. Curley in his paper, The Consolation of Philosophy as a Work of Literature. Philosophy guides her pupil from a state of self-centered despondency to a conception of God, all good and all powerful, whose providence controls the cosmos. Philosophy's purpose is to make apparent to Boethius God's dynamic presence in the world, and the structure of the work may be viewed as three progressively lofty disquisitions on this theme. Book 2 and 3 treat of Fortuna that wears the guise of fickle chance under which divine action presents itself to unregenerated mortal eyes, and in contrast to Fortuna, the nature of the true good. Book 4 deals with Fatum, the same divine action perceived in all its orderliness by human reason. Book 5 ascends to the level of Providentia, and attempts to explicate God's own immediate and all-inclusive perception of the workings of the world. As a number of scholars have pointed out, the first book not only introduces the work in its structure, it also foreshadows the progress from Fortuna to Providentia, thus reproducing in miniature the shape of the whole. And that'll be about it for this week. I hope you're enjoying the readings so far, and we'll see you next week.